Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Eric Zorn, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune, makes a triumphant return to the show. We've not seen you in several weeks, Eric. How are you?
It's been a while. I forget. Which one of you is Bill and which one is Wendy?
That's Wendy right over there.
You see, you don't want to assume anymore.
No.
So. Happy New Year. We haven't seen you since before the holidays.
Like before the holidays, right.
Long time.
It's been so long. Got any resolutions?
No.
To have you on.
Yep. Well, to have you on more often.
Check that box then.
I didn't say more often, by the way.
Oh, just on.
I just said
every once in a while.
Maybe once a month is pretty good.
That's fine.
No, my one word resolution is delete.
Oh, is that true?
Deleting stuff. And it's basically
purging?
Accumulated stuff. Well, Mary Schmeek likes the word purge. I think it's too violent and suggestive of
the movie.
Bodily functions and so on.
I never thought of that.
I really like the idea of going through your belongings and just getting rid of stuff that you no longer need or use.
Wendy just had an anti-clutter weekend at her house.
I did some serious cleaning up.
Is this a Marie Kondo thing?
Yeah, I'm into her, and then we had someone on from declutterbox.com, which is local. Marie Kondo is pretty much, you know, take everything you own, put it in a pile, and then go through it. I don't know if I can commit to that.
Right, and ask whether it gives you joy or
I found myself thanking some clothing that I put in the go-away pile. I said, thanks for... I loved wearing you. I felt silly at first.
You talked to your clothing?
Uh-huh. Yeah. But then I felt like...
Perfectly normal.
But then I felt when I got to some ones that I really liked, but I just didn't want it. Like, I had a jean vest that's probably going to come back, and I just said, hey, thanks for the good time. And I...
Yeah.
I like
if it comes
it.
Back, you can go to a thrift store and buy your jean vest.
Well, that's what I figure.
Was anyone around when you were talking to your clothing? Nobody?
No. I did say it out loud, too.
Oh, you did?
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
My rule of thumb, I've got a new rule of thumb, and that is if you've got something, and ask yourself, if I were walking down my alley and I saw that my neighbor had thrown this away.
I love this.
Put it on top of his garbage bin. Would you take it and bring it in your house?
Yeah.
And there are things maybe you will. It's like, hey, I need that. I don't have a whisk. I need a whisk.
Right.
You know, the assumption is that you don't have it.
Right.
And if the answer is no, if you wouldn't put that sort of effort, and that works for books.
I like it,
Eric. CDs, or all kinds of stuff. And we have this neighborhood garage sale in our neighborhood every year. And we have, like, you know, 100 houses, and they all put their stuff, you know, open their garages and sell stuff. And at the end of the day, when we participate in this, whatever we don't sell, once we've gotten it out to the garage, we just like push it out into the alley and shut the door and say, you know, take it. And people come through later in the day and take it. And then there's off the stuff. Sometimes there's stuff that you've had in your house for 25 years that nobody wants.
Right.
Not for free. They don't want it.
Can you throw a book away? I can't throw a book away.
Yes.
Go to Half Price Books. You can get some money for them.
Or
Goodwill.
Or you can donate them to Goodwill. And the truth is that a lot of people will donate books that are no longer... And there are a lot of people who have the same feeling you do about books, which is I just can't part with them.
Yeah.
And I did a column a long time ago now about the Brandeis book sale they have on the North Shore. And people donate all year to that. And they donate things like old MS-DOS manuals.
You know,
they have like computer manuals that for computers that are no longer made. And then, but people just can't... There's something that a lot of people have that cannot throw away a book.
Yeah.
And so they go... And it's kind of like... taking your pet to the shelter when he's 12 years old, like, here, someone will adopt him. You say, like, no one's going to adopt your book. Your book is going bye-bye. And so that basically they look upon themselves as performing euthanasia on books that nobody wants. And, you know, the truth is there are a lot of books like that you have. And so I'm pretty relentless about books. I think they sit there and think, am I going to read this? Is there a reasonable chance I'm going to read this? The answer is usually no.
Reread books? I know you said you do. I don't.
I do occasionally. I reread like Catch 22,
yeah,
which is a great book.
That you hadn't read in a while,
correct? The more meaningful books.
Yeah, well, I don't read it every year. I've read To Kill a Mockingbird, I think, 3 times.
Oh.
But, of course, that's often been in the context of kids. Like, I read it on my own, and then when there was one book, One Chicago, I read it. And then when my daughter was reading it in high school, I read it again while she was reading it.
Yeah.
But generally, no. Generally, I don't rewatch watch movies that much either.
I don't either.
It's like there's so much stuff out there that I haven't seen. Why would I spend time going back and watching stuff? Bill's looking at me like I'm
Well, if it comes
insane.
On the TV, I'll watch it. But like you, I know he does that.
I have a bunch of movies that I've seen, you know, 6, 7, 8 times.
What movie would
is
you
it any different the second? Because I'm not being funny. I know you know how it ends, but you are at a different point in your
that's
life, right?
That's why. With books and movies, even though the content is the same, the viewer
You're
or
different.
The reader has changed.
Well, that's true.
So the story's changed.
Yeah. And there are books like, again, this is in the context of my daughter in high school. I reread The Scarlet Letter and some of these classic
Of Mice and Men.
Huckleberry Finn, people like books like that I read when I was a kid. But I think a lot of those books are really wasted on kids.
Oh.
You don't really understand. You don't really understand what they're like because you're trying to get the plot points so you can answer. Well, Lenny does the, you know, he
right.
has the, you know, you want to be able to answer questions on a test. But
sure.
when you're reading it for pleasure, when you're reading it for a meeting
Way
as
different.
An adult, it's very different. So I do that, but in terms of like just rereading a book that I've enjoyed, like I say, the only one that really comes to mind that I just read for pleasure twice was Catch 22. I just love that book.
Yeah.
And but I don't know if I'll ever read it again.
I want to read Orwell's 1984 because we read it in high school
in
1980.
Yeah. Right.
So we were like, oh my God, this is so crazy, the future.
Yeah.
So I might read again.
Yeah, some of those books become strikingly relevant again based on the political situation.
Yeah.
So, but what movies do you watch over
and
over
again? Well, go with books for a second because Great Gatsby is my favorite book of all time. I've read it 4 times and it's been very different for me each of the 4 times.
As you get richer and richer.
As I get more miserly. And my friend Nick Carraway and I have a love-hate relationship. With movies, it's strange. Wendy and I have talked about The Godfather. To me, The Godfather is just the most perfect movie of
that
all time.
That was on this weekend on AMC or something.
I would have been
turn
inside
it off.
The whole... Yeah. But there's been a couple where, I don't know, there's just something about it that as I'm watching it, you always discover new things and you try to figure things out. Why would they have? Why would the writer have done that? Why would the actor have done that? Why would the director have done that?
I admit, we've watched A Christmas Story quite a few times.
Yeah.
Christmas movies don't count.
Okay, that doesn't count. What about Groundhog Day? Because we used to watch it on Groundhog Day.
I'm
every
sick of
year.
It. We're not going to mention Groundhog Day
Are you
on this
sick
show.
Of it?
Why?
The event.
Okay. Yeah.
We can talk about
stupid.
The movie.
The movie's good.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You're sick of the event?
Who cares?
No, you're right. It's not scientific. It's just
ridiculous.
No, it's not. Eric, I hate to break this to you, but it's always such a big media event, and every year we go, why do we even talk about this?
We're boycotting.
I didn't know you believed in science, Bill. Come on.
A huge
Punxsutawney Phil.
I know.
But no, we used to watch the movie every year.
But the movie's very entertaining.
It's good.
But after a while, yeah, I mean, we watched it like, I think, 6, 7 years in a row, and then I was like, okay.
But the best thing about the movie is stuff that you don't know if you just watch the movie, and that is that Harold Ramis and Bill Murray were fighting with each other all during the movie because one of them thought it should be a comedy and the other thought it should be a drama.
Really?
Yeah.
Now I got to watch it again now that I know this information.
Mess this up for me.
Harold Ramis directed it and he saw this as being a very serious thing and Bill Murray goes, no, there's nothing serious about this. It's a flat out comedy. And they fought all during the movie and for years and years after because of that.
But it works either way, right?
I mean, it works as both.
So,
yeah,
there you go. It's like
they found a compromise.
Yeah. So, well, just to get back to your decluttering thing, did you feel better?
Yes, I still have some ways to go, and I have to throw this in really quickly. There is a love seat that has been in my family since my grandmother was a teenager. My grandmother had 6 sisters. They all allegedly, the rumor is, they all made out on this couch. This it's
sold.
A little love seat, and so my
Name
cousin had it and said, you know, everyone. One of your great aunts, including your grandma, has been on this love seat. Do you want it? And I'm like, oh, yes, I do. And it moved from like my front room. Now it's in our bedroom and it just became a clutter pile. And I said to Jim, I'm like, I want that thing gone. I finally decided, no one, my kids don't want it, so what am I hanging it on to it for?
Well, that's the, I mean,
I don't want
it's
it.
The sentimental value, and this is a problem you have with all kinds of stuff that you run into when you're decluttering, which is you'll find,
what?
No, you'll find something that has only
sentimental meaning.
Only sentimental yep. value. So what we often do with things like this is take a picture of them. And
great idea.
And then we put them in our annual family photo album.
Oh, nice.
So it's there so we can reference it. We can look at it without having to actually walk around.
I'm going to take a picture of the love seat.
Take a picture of the love seat and put it out in the
Why
alley.
Do you laugh at
no
me?
No one will take it.
It's the history of the love
but
seat.
But doesn't that sound sweet?
It was before love was invented even. I mean, it goes back.
They all had a boyfriend that
so
they...
So how many relatives?
Like my grandma had 5 sisters, so...
I love
at
that.
One time, they each sat there with their date.
Donated to 5 Guys restaurants because it's ironic.
I think this could be like the basis of a movie, right? I
mean, yeah.
The seat.
The sisterhood of the traveling love seat.
Wendy's frowning.
Well, that's the only reason I took it off my cousin's hands, because she knew what I would be like. So she's like, oh, they all probably mate. She's probably lying. Oh. She just wanted to get rid of it.
Think how many relatives. How many of your relatives were conceived right. on that love seat?
This was all at different times, right? This wasn't the same time. Oh, okay.
They were just a few years
Where's
apart.
Where's Grandma's orgy seat? I don't know. It was
no,
here a minute ago.
This is kissing.
Oh, all right.
This is back in the days when you were, you know, you didn't give yourself to someone until you were married.
Bundle boards, right?
Yes, exactly. yes. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more with Eric Zorn of the Tribune in just a little bit. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune a little bit earlier than normal. And
when
that's
do you usually come?
11:30, right?
Yeah, I'm usually here at 11:30.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't notice.
Yeah. Oh.
I just knew it was a Monday when I see her.
It just felt right when she saw me. That's all.
Eric, there's a shift in power.
Yeah.
Explain.
Very interesting. The Democrats have, in Illinois, have more power now than I believe they have ever had.
Ever.
And the reason I say this is they have 74 seats out. That's 14 more than a majority in the House, which is a bigger majority than they've had, I think, percentage-wise, since the 30s. They've got a 40-19 advantage in the Illinois State Senate.
Mm-hmm.
They won about 60% of the vote in November. And both those advantages are what we call supermajorities. They're actually larger than supermajorities by several votes. And a supermajority is something that you that you can use to advance a constitutional amendment. You can override a veto by the governor if that becomes necessary. They didn't really they sort of had that in the last session, but there was this guy Ken Duncan and mm-hmm. other people. I mean, sorry, not the last session, but the previous General Assembly before the one that just left. But they had a couple of rogue Democrats who weren't going to go along with Speaker Madigan and who were siding with Rauner or staying away from some of these issues. In any case, my point is that every single state constitutional officer, the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, the Comptroller, the Treasurer, they're all Democrats. The Illinois State Supreme Court is a 4-3 Democratic majority. Democrats have the governorship again, and they have these supermajorities in the legislature. Again, I think this is the biggest hold on power that they've ever had. And one little extra thing about the hold on power they have in the House is that more of their majority is concentrated in Chicago and the suburbs than it has been in the past. They used to have a lot of sort of more downstate Democrats. And those downstate Democrats tend to be very socially conservative, so they have a hard time advancing certain things. And it's always a delicate balance with that. So the column I wrote on Sunday basically said, okay, Democrats, you asked for the voters to endorse you. You asked for the power. You said you could change things. You said you could fix things. They gave it to you.
Yeah.
60% of the voters voted Democratic. And so now what are you going to do? Because the state is, $7.4 billion behind in its bills. It's got a $133 billion pension deficit. We have
the worst in the nation, correct?
Worst in the nation. We have the worst credit rating in the nation.
Yeah.
We have a lot of problems that were there that Governor Rauner made worse. And they said, well, we're going to turn this around. We have problems without migration right now. Illinois is losing population. All these things have to be turned around. Our job growth, our unemployment rate is higher than the national average. We're going to have to turn all those things around. And it's one party rule, and people are, people always say they like bipartisanship. They like two parties to get together. But what we see often is that when two parties get together and they fight all the time, nothing happens. Things need to happen in Illinois. Democrats have to make them happen. Now, if they don't, I think they've got 2 years to the next legislative elections, once all the members of the House come back up again, 4 years for the next Democratic, for the next gubernatorial election. They've got to get it done. If they can't get it done, they really have to give the ball over to the other party and say, you guys try it now.
Mm-hmm. Go back for a second to us losing population here in Illinois. Is that due to tax reasons, or is that due to something
else? It's hard to say exactly why. A lot of people think that it's because we have some of the highest property tax rates in the country.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The property tax rates are high. The corrupt people are upset with the political corruption.
Yeah.
They look at the pension debt that we have and say, well, the only way they're going to make this up is to raise taxes on me more.
Right.
And then you look at some of these other states where that are not in as big a trouble, and the weather is better. And so, yeah, we have this we're losing population in Illinois. We're losing one or two. We're going to lose one or two congressional seats. Now, some of that is going to be inevitable. You're not going to be able to turn that around, but some of it I think you can address. I think you can figure out ways to look at what other states are doing. Other states like Minnesota is doing much better than Illinois. California is doing better than Illinois. People say that Florida and Texas are doing better. You have to look at what they're doing right, and they have to figure out how to emulate that. And it's not going to be pain-free, for sure. There are going to be people are going to probably have to pay higher taxes. They're probably going, there are certain unions, probably public sector unions, are not going to be able to make as much money as they were. Their pension benefits, especially for new hires, are going to be lower. So you're going to have a lot of these issues are going to come up, and the Democrats are going to have to take that pain. They're going to have to suffer the anger that they may shrink their majority because they're going to make some unpopular decisions.
Right.
But unpopular decisions are going to have to be made here. So
what do you think will be Pritzker's biggest obstacle?
I think. Well, certainly one. I mean, he's going up against some headwinds right now. We've got this stack of unpaid bills.
We've got
this out migration. We've got all this.
I think he's going to have to bring
along Democratic legislators who are going to have to maybe cast votes that are going to be difficult for them. I mean, one thing is, infrastructure, which is a word that's going to put half the listeners to sleep, but that's roads and bridges and things like that we have to keep repaired.
Mm-hmm.
And the need for that has been strong in the state for a long time, but there's the money to pay for it. It's not clear where that comes from. And we haven't raised the gas tax in Illinois since 1991. And it's a per gallon gas tax, meaning that it doesn't rise and fall based on the price of gas. So when you have something like that, it's like you're actually losing money as you go along. It makes sense to raise that gas tax. Nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to talk about raising any tax at all. I think we should be able to get by with spending what we did before without raising any taxes. It's just kind of unrealistic, mm-hmm. the way that goes. So the biggest obstacle he's going to face is he's going to run into Democrats in his own caucus who are going to just say, hey, I can't vote this way because I'm not going to be reelected in 2 years.
Yeah.
That's going to be his big problem. He's going to have to convince them to take some painful votes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to try to bring some Republicans along, some people who are going to realize that we have to get together, and maybe there's ways to offset this, maybe there's some ways to cut some deals. He is striking the right tone right now. He was meeting with Republicans over the weekend. He is reaching out in ways that Governor Rauner never reached out, in ways that Governor Quinn constitutionally was sort of unable to reach out, where you have to be able to like bring people together in some ways.
Right.
And he seems to have now, and of course it's all easy to do before you actually have the power given to you, before you have to make those tough decisions. And it's like campaigning, it's all rainbows and unicorns. And
sure.
So on. And then when you have to get in there and actually make some of these tough decisions.
Different story.
One of the really interesting things he's going to be facing is the graduated income tax, which
he
campaigned on, and it's going to be a tough lift.
Yep. That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. When can people hear The Mincing Rascals?
The Mincing Rascals is a WGN Plus podcast, and it's John Williams, Steve Bertram, me, Scott Stannis, Justin Kaufman sometimes, Patty Vasquez, and we record on Thursday mornings, and it usually is ready for your drive home on Thursday afternoon.
Excellent. So. Good to see you, Eric.
Nice
Thanks for coming
you.
By.
Thanks, Eric.
It's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. More after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN.